From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the ninth day of May 2013. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker at CGB Enterprises. He's in Mandeville, Louisiana. Matt Bennett's down at TGM in Windsor, Illinois. We'll be along to look at the cash grain market. And we'll hear all about the weather forecast from T-Storm Weather's Mike Tenora. He's in Chicago, Illinois. Along the way today, Lisa Brault's In My Backyard segment, and it all happens during this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
Well, in Chicago on a Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby soft red winter wheat May contract at 716 and a quarter, settlement price there 19.5 cents higher. July or the harvest month at 723 and a half, up 17 and a half, and September at 731 and a half, and the soft red up 16 and a quarter. The hard red finished the July at 779 and a quarter. That was 19 cents higher in Kansas City. From the corn pit back in Chicago, May futures now the lead option settled at $6.49 and a half, up 19 and a half cents. July at 648 and three quarters, 15 and three quarters higher. In September, corn at 566, up 12 and a quarter. December contract 541 and a half, up 9 and a half. And the March corn at 551 and a half, up 8 and three quarters. May futures settlement price at $5.59, up 8 and a quarter for next year. May bean futures at $14.91 and a quarter. The settlement price for the nearby at 12 and a quarter higher for the day in Chicago. July futures $14.08 and three quarters, up 18. And August at $13.40, up 10 and a half. September soybeans $12.64 and a quarter, 7 and a quarter higher. November contract $12.19 a bushel, up 4 and three quarters. January futures in the bean pit at $12.26 and a quarter. Up 4 and a half. The bean meal futures finished at $440.10. That's up $14.80. Bean oil at $49.07, 41 cents higher. Both of those the lead options. August live cattle at $120.52 and a half, up 52 and a half. The October at $123.75, 62 and a half cents higher. August feeders at $145.97 and a half, up 65. And September at $147.85, up 90 cents for the day. June lean hogs at $90.57 and a half per 100 pounds, down $1.20, and the July at $91.22 and a half, finished 67 and a half cents lower. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It does come to you from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. It is public radio for the farming world. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. June crude oil at $95.84 a barrel, down 79 cents. The RBOB, or wholesale price of gasoline, at $2.87 and 2 cents. That's a penny and 8 cents higher. Ethanol trading at $2.61 is up 2 and 7 tenths of a cent. And the difference between the RBOB and the ethanol is now 26 and a tenth. That's just about 9 tenths of a cent in the different than it was yesterday. A bit narrower. Natural gas at $3.97 and 7 tenths is down 1 tenth of a cent. And heating oil or diesel fuel at $2.92 and a tenth. Up 6 tenths of a cent. Gold futures finished at $1,468.60 an ounce today, $5.10 lower, and the dollar trading 0.88 higher at 87, or rather 82.78 on the afternoon. The weather forecast for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon says we'll see some showers, a few thunderstorms, a high of 74 degrees on a south wind at 11 miles an hour. That'll gust all the way to 16. Chance of rainfall in the area set at 80% for this afternoon. And then this evening, showers and thunderstorms likely, mainly before 1 a.m. Cloudy, a low of 56. Tomorrow, a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Friday evening, mostly cloudy and 47 degrees. Saturday, mostly sunny and 65. Saturday night, clear and 42. Sunny on Sunday and 59. Sunday night, mostly clear and 39. Monday, sunny and 65. Monday night, partly cloudy and 48. And on Tuesday, mostly sunny skies and the high near 76 degrees. Tuesday night, partly cloudy and a low of 60. And Wednesday of next week, mostly sunny and a high of 81. We'll need the warm and dry weather and the sunshine to get things started in the planting. We'll talk more about that in just a moment right here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural market reports on WILL are made possible with support from Busey. Small business is the next big business. So Busey offers solutions to fit growing business needs, from customizable lending options to succession planning. Busey, your dream, our promise.
It is a Thursday afternoon. On the phone line, Dan Zwicker from CGB Enterprises. He's in Mandeville, Louisiana. Dan, it's raining here this afternoon. How about where you are?
We don't have no rain, but the forecast says we're going to get some heavy rain here over the next 24, 48 hours. If you look at the five-day total, at least the forecast of the five-day total. So, but we don't really lack any moisture down here, just like you guys up north don't lack any moisture.
Not at the moment, anyway, that's for sure.
Everything is green, growing, and actually the flowers never did die down here, so they're year-round. We have flowers down here year-round. So
yeah, we have lots of wet, but nothing is green and growing, at least in the field at this point. It's still a lot of brown.
Well, I understand at least the northern areas of our listening audience was planting corn yesterday up above 80. I think they're fairly active, but I think the central portion of our audience is probably not doing a whole lot. Is that right?
Yeah, not much. I took about a 200-mile ride. Over two different sites around 24 hours yesterday. And if you go towards Danville, yesterday, but not certainly today, or on Tuesday, they were in the field, but I saw only three guys out. Two of them had field cultivators on, one with a planter. But they were just scratching the earth. And then yesterday afternoon, I took off and went straight west on the blacktops. If you're coming out of Cisco towards Mount Pulaski and then Elkhart, which is my hometown in Illinois, and that's about a 60-mile run, I ran across one guy in the field, and he was planting his second field for that day, and that's it. And I counting those two fields, four between Cisco and Elkhart, and that's got to be, 45 miles that were planted and then visited with my family. They were actually in the field and planting yesterday afternoon. But they were one of the few, and they no-till, at least in that place. So we'll see how things go. It's an interesting thing, but there's not a lot planted in central Illinois, that's for sure. When you can count them on one hand, that's nothing. That counts as a zero.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't even really talked around to see what the trade expects, to see what the planning intentions number on Monday afternoon is going to be. I have no idea. I actually think the numbers have been running a little bit low, but that's just my impression. You know, when we started out, I think 2 weeks ago at four, and then what did we climb to this week, nine or something like that? I think those are kind of low, but that's just the way it is. It'll be interesting to see if we get up close to this 20% mark here, because it will be, May 13th at 20% begins to start biting the fingernails, because you've got another week yet to get to, and you could have maybe half the crop planted after May 20th, which would not really be a good start anyway, to have at least a big time yield anyway.
That is certainly when you start to drop yield off pretty quickly. You can talk to Emerson Nafziger. If you go onto our website at willag.org right now, you'd have to look under the Willag notes and then hit read more, because you won't see it. But Emerson's there, and he talks a little bit about that and what the amount that you drop off happens to be in corn yield. It's there, but it's substantial. After you get to the 20th, it starts to drop off pretty quickly in terms of corn yield. So it'll be fun to watch. It wouldn't be fun to participate in, but that's
always the case. Well, I know in the past, though, if you go back and take a look at other weather markets where we had weather adversities in the spring, whether it was too wet, too dry, whatever, May 20th seems to be the magic date where the market all of a sudden realizes that, planting hasn't gone very well.
Right.
And we've lost acres or we've reduced yield potential. And that a lot of times that's when the market takes off and rallies then into that June, early July timeframe until the market feels more comfortable with what the prospects really are. And then, of course, you know, on the June report, that's when we get the plantings number, and then by then we know what July weather is.
What are your charts telling you about the summer months at this time? Anything interesting?
Well, let's put it this way. I think today's price action, today's surge to the upside, if you're a market bull, you like this. If you're wanting markets to go down, you did not like today's trade. Because, and the reason I say that is because it looks to me like over the past 2-3 weeks here, we're shifting the trend to something higher, because our highs are getting higher and our lows are getting higher. And I say that, you know, with that big surge that we had here a week ago Monday, took out the previous rally high points, just sliced through it like warm butter. Then, of course, we've had this steep decline, scary decline, probably more so in new crop corn than anything else. But now, today, U.S. December corn traced out an outside up reversal. So that held above the March 24th low. So that looks to me like we could be shifting the new crop corn trend sideways to higher. Actually, your expiring May corn filled Monday's gap, which is always constructive if you fill a gap, if you've got enough power to go up. In case this was a downside gap, to go up there and fill it. Now, July and your other contracts haven't done that, but that'll be the function to see whether or not today's strength follows through over the next several days into next week, and see if we can fill those gaps that were left on Monday. If we do, then I think the overall chart picture really improves for, you know, some kind of run at that high that we had there a week ago Monday. In these corn, it was up around 570. November soybeans, it was up there around 1240. So I think there's, you know, when I look at today's price action, it kind of opens the door for another run at the highs that we had here, like I said, a week and a half ago. And then we kind of go from there. Soybeans have already, the wheat futures, if you look at Chicago July wheat, we've already had a couple instances of higher highs and higher lows. So I think that trend is shifting sideways to higher. And I think that basically has a lot to do with continued deterioration of the hard red winter wheat crop. We've even seen some deterioration in the soft red winter wheat crop because of too much moisture. So I think that's indicating that the supplies are tightening. And then we are also beginning to pick up more and more chatter of the dryness in the Black Sea areas of Russia and Ukraine. And we know Australia is dry. So world wheat production numbers may be kind of slipping away, and that is probably what's maybe behind this wheat market rally.
And you think we'll see any of those show up in tomorrow's WASD figures?
my confidence level on WASD reports is pretty low, but they may not do much shuffling on those because it's early yet. My guess is, though, you could maybe see some ratcheting up of the South American corn and soybean crop. It seems like those crops are plenty big down there. As far as WASD's modeling, to my understanding on this new crop stuff, they use planting dates as a very heavy in their model.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, we all know that they took that early planting and pumped up the yield to the sky at 166, and they only missed that by, 45 bushels. So I don't know what they'll
do.
That's
not fair.
Well, I think July August weather is more important than planting days. Let's put it that way.
There you go.
It'll be interesting to see if they come off of that yield that they put out of the ag form. I think that was something like 162.5 or something like that.
Right.
And how far off they come off of that. My guess is if their model is weighted that way, they're going to have to recognize this year's slow planting pace, and they're going to have to come off of it at least a few bushels. Most people kind of feel that their demand numbers will be optimistic because of the large competition that we're going to see out of South America this coming year. That's where the problem's going to be at.
Yeah, that's where I wanted to go next. You mentioned South America, the potential that they might increase production numbers out of both Brazil and Argentina for corn and soybeans. So the question really is there enough production, enough competition there that even if the United States is short again in some form, and short's a debatable number at this point, that it will have an impact on the marketplace?
Well, it's hard to say. But you can almost look at today's export market in corn, and it almost looks like we've lost it already. Brazil and Argentina, Brazil especially, has increased their production levels so much in corn that my guess is that they're going to be a seller of export corn into the world market all the way into the fall months, could even go into the early January months. And that does not spell real well, I think, for U.S. corn exports. Now, soybeans is a little different because China is the big dog in soybean demand. But my guess is that with that South American crop, that's going to shave our export demand. Of course, a lot of it depends upon what we raise. But I think we have a real problem on our hands competing with Brazil in the long run. I think that's going to be a real because they're going to be year-round competitors. They're almost there now. If they have favorable weather, they will be year-round competitors, and that's going to put a little pressure on U.S. ag commodities.
Thank you so much, Dan. We'll talk to you for Commodity Week.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker is with CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. Speaking of Commodity Week, Drew Lerner of World Weather will be our guest this week on that program.
Support comes from the Black Dog Smoke and Ale House, serving barbecue beef brisket, pork shoulder, ribs, chicken, and more. Slow-cooked over a wood-fired smoker. The Black Dog, 201 North Broadway in downtown Urbana. Open Sunday through Thursday, 11 a.m. to 10 p.m., and Friday and Saturday, 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. And from Common Ground Food Co-op, now at Lincoln Square Mall, featuring organic and local foods grown right here in Illinois. Learn more on their website at www.commonground.coop.
Up next, Lisa Brault says a sure sign of spring is the popping up of farmers' almanacs in her latest edition of In My Backyard.
While humans have been keeping track of tides and time since, well, we started keeping track of stuff, we didn't really start writing this information down until about 1,000 years ago. And it took hundreds more years to get that information published as almanacs. Farmers' almanacs resembling the version we currently think of went into print in the early 18th century. Ben Franklin's Poor Richard's Almanac was one of them, and its popularity led to the publication of more almanacs, some well-known and general in scope, and others more obscure and marketed to specific audiences. The old farmer's almanac, that's the one you see most often now at the grocery store in the checkout line next to the fashion magazines, it's yellow, has been in print in one form or another since 1792. My attempts to find a local collector of vintage almanacs were surprisingly fruitless, so I turned to the internet to find some, preferably in central Illinois. Not quite. I discovered that Conner Prairie Interactive History Park in Fishers, Indiana, about a two-hour drive from my location in Urbana, Illinois, partnered with Indiana University to curate the Conner Prairie Historical Almanac Collection, an online display of 64 vintage almanacs. The oldest almanac in the bunch dates from 1783. They're not on actual display. You can't go see them, but anyone with an internet connection can look at these almanacs. Check out the link on the In My Backyard page on our website. I found some gems.
And it says here that, and I quote, "There are but three classes of men, the retrograde, the stationary, and the progressive."
farmers' almanacs were once second only to the Bible in terms of the popularity of books owned by many households. Farmers' almanacs assumed basic knowledge and familiarity with seasons and surroundings, and that their readers were largely responsible for providing their own food and other necessities. One book covered it all. But as a wider variety of books were printed and people got away from rural life, we seem to need almanacs less. Why print an almanac at all in 2013? Why would someone interested in gardening or farming today, especially a young person, want an almanac, except maybe for the kitsch factor?
Obviously, as new farmers, we're trying as hard as we can to learn as much as we can, to farm as well as we can, and often that takes us into the realm of old books. So it's not that surprising that we would choose an old format, a tried and true format, you could say, to compile historical information and miscellanea. But I would say not only historical miscellanea, also contemporary miscellanea in this case.
That's Severine von Charner Fleming, founder of Greenhorns, an organization based in Hudson, New York, whose mission is to recruit, promote, and support the new generation of young farmers. Greenhorns recently released the first volume of their own almanac, called the New Farmer's Almanac. It's an engaging compendium of old. A lot of its content could have come from the same almanacs in Connor Prairie's collection, and new, with pieces written reflecting a variety of current-day political and educational sensibilities and opinions around small family farming and its relationship to our food system. It's a tool. There's a moon calendar and review of farming practices, and it comes with that almanac-y touch of having the hole in the upper left-hand corner punched out, all the better to hang on a nail in the garage or shed. But it's also in print to educate and to spark conversation and deeper thought, much as you'd imagine almanacs did more than a century ago.
A lot of the press and a lot of the communication around farming is oriented towards consumers. And I would say the almanac is oriented towards producers. And that means people not only who are producing food and building businesses that produce food, but also people who participate in the restructuring of our economy.
This Farmer's Almanac can enjoy pride of place on your bookshelf, or it can join your shovel and your hoe on its own nail in the garage. For In My Backyard, this is Lisa Braltz.
Our thanks to Lisa Braltz and to Dave Dickey for the production of our In My Backyard segments.
Learned Seed Service supports agricultural programming on WILL as an additional service to its customers. Learned Seed Service is an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgro seed products to farmers throughout East Central Illinois via the Asgro on-demand bulk soybean handling system. Learned Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
It's a Thursday. Let's check the cash grain market very quickly with Matt Bennett at TGM in Windsor, Illinois. First, did you get rain?
Yes.
And second, when can you get in the field?
Well, I guess this is what we've been saying all spring, but if it does not rain again, you know, I'd say it's going to be a solid week again. We got a good inch again.
Third, have many people been in the field yet?
Right here, close, no. You know, we've heard of a few, you know, once you get more than, you know, 20 miles away, but right here close, it's just, you know, it's just too heavy.
And then how's movement of corn?
There's actually a fair amount of movement as far as TGM goes. We're railing some corn out, and then as far as beans go, we've got beans going all over the place. But there's just not a whole lot of beans out there, and I think that's part of the reason why you're seeing the basis has gotten fairly hot in some places is people are just kind of grabbing for them right now.
And your bids for the day?
Cash corn, 676, fall, 521, cash beans, 1488, fall, 1198.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Matt Bennett. He's with TGM out of Windsor, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon. In just a couple minutes, I'll be back. We'll talk about the agricultural weather forecast. On the line with us this afternoon, Mike Tenora of T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois.
It's National Butterscotch Brownie Day. Samuel Parkinson began making butterscotch candy in 1817. The candy had royal approval, and it was one of England's attractions until it ceased production in 1977. The recipe was revived in 2003. On this day in agricultural history in 1787, James Pollard Espy was born, an American meteorologist. He was one of the first to collect meteorological observations by telegraph. In 1845, Carl Gustav Patrick de Lava was born, a Swedish scientist. he invented a continuous centrifugal cream separator, which he patented in 1894. Milk flowed into the machine in a small and continuous stream and was whirled and separated as it passed through, the cream leaving from one aperture and the skimmed milk from another. He also designed a vacuum milking machine. However, it was not until after he died that the company he founded made its first commercially practical milking machine. And in 1914, C.W. Post died. He founded the Postum Cereal Company in 1895. In 1922, the company was renamed General Foods Corporation. Its earliest cereal product debuted in 1897, and you can still find Grape Nuts on grocery shelves today. A 1904 cereal went by the name of Elijah's Manna. It's better known today as Post Toasties. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Thursday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason. On the phone line with us to look at the agricultural weather forecast is Mike Tenorum. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois. Mike, tell me about the rainfall that has come through the Midwest over the past couple of days. It's making its way from the west to the east. I'm really concerned about amounts and how long farmers might be out of the field more than anything else.
Well, amounts will be locally significant. We'll see anywhere from a half inch to 1.5 inches of rain scattered across the eastern half of the Corn Belt, primarily from eastern Iowa through Illinois and then on to the east. We do have some significant areas of rain moving through this afternoon, and this is more or less the main event. Once the big rains go through today, it should start to taper off later on tonight, and then a few more showers around tomorrow. But today is really the big day for rainfall. Let's say the next 12 hours or so, then things will start to improve. Now, the only potential issue we have with improving conditions is that it will turn quite a bit colder for several days this weekend, especially Saturday, Sunday. So unseasonably cooled on. But if we have any good news, and we do have a little bit, there's going to be an extremely sharp warm-up occurring early next week. We'll see high temperatures soar well into the 80s and 90s across the plains as early as Sunday, Monday, and then a tentacle of warmth will sweep eastward and envelop the Corn Belt. We'll see widespread highs in the 80s, possibly by Monday, Tuesday, and into Wednesday. So there will be a dramatically warmer pattern beginning here for at least a couple days next week.
And when you look further out, if you've done so, what do you see after that?
It is fairly apparent that a cool front will drop southward around Wednesday or Thursday next week, and that will trigger scattered thunderstorms across a large portion of the Corn Belt, including some of the wettest areas of Iowa and Illinois. So that's not really great news, but we're not looking for a widespread long-term rain situation, just a scattered thunderstorm event with half-inch to one-inch amounts most likely. As we go further from there, it's real difficult to say. We don't have an El Nino developing. We don't have a La Nina developing either. And what that means is that ocean temperatures in the Pacific will stay fairly close to normal throughout the U.S. growing season. So that doesn't give us a real good clue as to what to expect later on in the summer.
And finally, if you have an assessment of growing conditions in the growing regions of China, that would probably most likely be the northeastern quadrants.
Well, the Manchuria region, which is northeast China, things were looking better as recently as earlier in the week as temperatures turned much warmer after a very cold April. And it also was turning drier after a marginally wet period. It wasn't too bad. But the problem we have right now, if you can call it a problem, we're not exactly sure what to make of it, but temperatures are turning cooler again and returning back toward seasonable levels, and we're starting to see areas of rain develop as the jet stream essentially flows right across northeast China. Therefore, conditions for corn and soybean planting, which take place right now, aren't looking quite as good as they were going to look earlier in the week. So not the best conditions there. At the same time, we're not looking for huge rain events like we had across the U.S. Corn Belt earlier in April.
Thanks so much for taking the time with us today, Mike.
You're welcome.
Mike Tenorum is with T-Storm Weather. He's in Chicago, Illinois. That wraps up this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.